In the name of God, who is creating and is redeeming and is sustaining. This season, I have found myself particularly compelled by and drawn into the spirit and the message of what we celebrate today, the Feast of All Saints, compelled by and drawn into this idea of the communion of saints and how this all might provide sustenance and nourishment for our daily living today in the times that we are navigating. Now, just as an aside, in case there are any recovering Roman Catholics like me in the house who may find yourselves wondering at some point, perhaps because of some past old conditioning or conversation, what's the difference between All Saints and All Souls? Don't we need to make a distinction between these two? Well, here's where I've landed on that question, in the temple of my own heart. Not really. For what purpose? Aren't we all children of the great I Am, that great and holy mystery I Am that I Am? Each of us in various stages of remembering and recalling who we really are and whose we really are? Those we lift up and remember today have all completed their earthly journey and now travel and exist beyond our sight. To lift up saints as those who were somehow distinct and separate from us, as those others who have reached or attained some far-off pinnacle or height, unachievable for ordinary humans, ordinary souls, well, that's just not helpful. Nor is it the point, nor the way revealed to us so exquisitely by Jesus. So then what's the point? How might this all be helpful in a practical way for us who still travel on this side of the veil? This past Wednesday, during our weekly chapel time with students from our Redeemer Parish Day School, as all the children sat on those steps right there in front of the altar, their bright eyes and beautiful faces stared up as I drew for them some pictures on a flip chart. I had three different pictures on three different pages. On the third page of the chart, I drew a picture of the sun. On the second page of the flip chart, I drew a picture of clouds. And on the first page, I drew stars in the night sky. But I started on page three with the picture of the sun. The main point and message to those beautiful faces and big, wide, bright eyes. Love lasts forever, never goes away. And just like the sun is always there in the sky and shining, even on a cloudy day when clouds hide it, and I flipped the page with the clouds over top the page with the sun, or in the nighttime when the evening comes and I flip the page with the starry sky over top the clouds over top the sun. The sun is still there, hidden by the clouds in the night sky, but it's still there in the sky. And I heard one little girl gasp, oh, it is shining down on us. We have people we still love who we can't see anymore. Then I switched to some PowerPoint slides and I showed them some faded black and white photographs of my ancestors in the Philippines, my grandparents, great aunts, great uncles, and then two colored photographs of my mother, one of which shows her standing in a very stylish hairdo in her mid-20s against a backdrop of golden autumn leaves. As the light of the projector and the light off the slides bounced off the light on the children's faces. We all have people we love whom we see no longer, I said. We miss them, and we feel sad when we can't see them anymore. But today is a special day when we remember and thank God for them, and we remember that just like the sun on a cloudy day or in the night sky, their love is still shining down on us, even when we can't see them anymore. Franciscan friar and contemporary spiritual teacher Richard Rohr, in one of his reflections recently, quoted Vietnamese Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh, who writes of an experience of tender oneness with his mother. The day his mother died, Thich Nhat Hanh remembers writing in his journal, "A serious misfortune of my life has arrived." Then he goes on to recall how he suffered for more than a year after the passing of his mother. But one night, he recalls, in the highlands of Vietnam, I was sleeping in the hut of my hermitage. I dreamed of my mother. I saw myself sitting with her. We were having a wonderful talk. She looked young and beautiful, her hair flowing down. It was so pleasant to sit and talk as if she'd never died. Some of you may have had these kinds of dreams. And when I woke up, it was about 2 a.m, and I felt so strongly I had never lost my mother. The impression she was still with me was very clear, and I understood then that the idea of having lost my mother was just that, an idea. It was obvious in that moment, my mother is always alive in me. He goes on to describe how he opened the door and went outside. The entire hillside was bathed in moonlight. It was a hill covered with tea plants. My hut was set behind the temple halfway up. And walking slowly in the moonlight through the rows of tea plants, I noticed my mother was still with me. She was the moonlight caressing me. Ooh, that was loud. Sorry. She was the moonlight caressing me as she had done so often, very tender and very sweet. And each time my feet touched the earth, I knew my mother was there with me. I knew this body was not mine alone, but a living continuation of my mother and my father and my grandparents and great-grandparents, all my ancestors. These feet that I saw as my feet were actually our feet. Together, my mother and I were leaving footprints in the soil. In the days and weeks following my own mother's death, some of you may recall me bearing witness to my own experiences of ongoing communion with her, which in turn elicited from many of you sharing with me your own experiences of oneness with your beloved departed. There are those signs in nature, those songs coming on the radio, those quirky electrical happenings that happen. One theologian observes, how else would God's infinite love, in and through the love of our beloved departed, commune or communicate with us, if not through the very created world around us? What other medium is there to use? A painter uses paints and paintbrushes and canvases. God uses our created world. But there are those other extraordinary experiences too. Dr. Barbara Holmes, scholar of African-American spirituality and mysticism, writes about some of her extraordinary experiences, one in particular where she found herself as a child hovering over her body, her consciousness, looking down on her body. And she writes, "I should have been scared, but I wasn't afraid at all. I was happy to the point of bursting. The sense of euphoria filled me, and then I realized my beloved deceased Aunt Grace was there. I didn't see her, but I knew she was nearby, and her closeness to me made me even happier." Then she talks about how the consciousness came back into her body, and she ran into the room next door to tell the adults in her life that she had flown and that Aunt Grace was playing with her, and the mention of my deceased aunt stopped everything. But see, most families would have poo-pooed my account of flying and visitations from a dead relative. My family, though, has roots in the Gula culture of South Carolina on my father's side and the Maryland Eastern Shore mystics on my mother's, so they share a belief that love lasts forever, and our beloved departed shine on beyond our physical sight and are present with us, encouraging, loving. Dr. Holmes writes, when I couldn't come up with any deep wisdom or any important message from the other side, one of my aunts just said rather pointedly, well, let us know if she comes to you again. And there it was. I had received affirmation that Aunt Grace had been there and might come again. We are not alone. We are not alone. Just as we are bound to one another and belong to one another in relationship in this earthly life, so we are bound and belong to our beloved departed, whose enduring love, and it's only the love and the light that lasts forever, that shines through the veil when we see them no longer. As part of the web of the light of Christ that holds us together in one infinite tapestry of divine love that exists both in and beyond space and time. So what gets in the way of our experiencing this oneness in our daily lives? It could be doubt. Do we actually believe this reality? Do we give our hearts to it? Or is it just an idea that we talk about? Could it be the monkey mind, that never-ending stream of thoughts, that constant, steady talk radio? Hopefully you're not experiencing that in my preaching at the moment. That litany of anxieties and worries and proclamations and judgments and running commentary and projections. If we could but practice and exercise that muscle of how it is to be silent and to still the turbulence of our mind, to quiet the constant chatter of our egoic self who identifies as separate and self-sufficient. As Jesus calmed the waves of the stormy sea, perhaps we might be more receptive and awake to the oneness of which we are a part, not apart from, but a part of. Kind of like eliminating the static on a radio station to be able to tune in to that music that's playing, the song being sung, the voice of the beloved speaking through the chaos and the din. Be still and know that I am God. So let's try that for just a few moments, if you will allow me to lead you in a practice of stillness. I invite you to close your eyes or pick a spot in front of you and gaze at it softly. I invite you to settle into the temple of your body that houses your spirit. Feel your tailbone seated on the pew or chair. Feel your spine extending up from your tailbone, vertebrae by vertebrae, up through the back of your neck, out through the crown of your head. Breathe. And tune into the beating of your heart. Can you be still enough to feel the beating of your own heart? And as you continue tuning in to the beat of your heart, I invite you to bring to your mind's eye an image of a beloved departed. Don't question who comes in. Just accept and allow. Hold that beautiful face in your mind's eye. Picture that face filled with light, shining through his or her eyes. And now feel that light shining in through your beloved's eyes. filling you, filling your head and your neck. Breathe. That light and love filling your chest and your rib cage, streaming from his or her eyes into yours, down into your abdomen, down into your pelvic bowl, filling your legs and your feet. Breathe in that light and love of which you are a part. And then if your eyes have been closed, allow your eyelids to flutter open, still shining forth the love and light within and all around. Father Richard Rohr writes, "I believe that one of the essential events we must walk through is the experience of the passion and death with someone we love, with someone we're bonded to." When my mother passed over, he writes, "I had no doubt she built a bridge. I don't know what other words to use. She built a bridge and took some of me over with her and sent some of herself back. And I understand now at a deeper level what Jesus meant by, unless I go, the Spirit cannot come. The pattern of history is for each generation to pass over and build the bridges of love and trust for the next generation coming afterwards. The all-important thing for all of us is that we be bonded somewhere. If you have never loved, there is no bridge. So how might we live today? How might our actions be focused today if we were to abide in that reality? And that is the faith in which we are going to be welcoming and baptizing Anna and Robert. Therefore, since we are surrounded and supported by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and the sin, the illusion of separateness and isolation that clings so closely. Let us run with perseverance the race set before us, looking to Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. Or as Eugene Peterson says, do you see what this means? All these pioneers who blazed the way, all these veterans cheering us on. It means we better get on with it. Strip down, start running, don't quit. And keep your eyes on Jesus, who both began and finished this race that we're in. Study how he did it, because he never lost sight of where he was headed. That exhilarating finish in and with God. Amen.